Well, this is KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. Big thanks to Megan for an amazing music show. And a big congratulations to everyone at KDNK for meeting that spring membership drive goal. It was a big one, but now that we're past that, we can just enjoy the music, enjoy the sunshine, and enjoy each other. I'm in the studio, Raleigh Burley, Sopra Sun editor, here with intern Gus Richardson.
Hello.
Yesenia Buenavides.
Hello.
And we've got John Fox Rubin as our guest.
Hello.
And on the phone, it's a full cast today. We have Will Buzzard, who reported on the article we'll be speaking about today. Are you there, Buzz? Okay. Well, that's not a good sign. Okay. Well, I'm going to get Buzz connected and turn it over to our students, Gus and Yesenia, to go ahead and ask for that introduction from John, and we'll get it worked out to get Buzz back on the phone here.
Well, John, who are you? Who do you work for?
I am John Fox Rubin, and I work for CLEAR in Carbondale, which stands for Clean Energy Economy for the Region. And CLEAR is a nonprofit that's been operating here for 15 or so years and doing quite a bit, not just in Carbondale, but in the whole western part of Colorado and other parts of Colorado as well in different programs.
All right. Well, John, do you want to tell us a little bit about this heat beneath our feet that's going on?
Yeah, so Will interviewed me earlier this week about a workshop, a community workshop, and a community open house that we're holding next week. And it's entitled The Heat Beneath Our Feet, which is a slogan that our governor came up with recently to really foster our thinking differently about this untapped resource throughout Colorado and throughout the country, that our ground is a great source of energy that we can borrow from and put energy back into. So that's partly why we're holding this workshop, is to share what we're learning on a local project, but also bring some other people that are very involved in this kind of work to Carbondale to help educate all of us on the potential of geothermal energy in its various forms.
Well, I believe we do have Mr. Will Buzzard on the phone here now. Buzz, you there?
Yep, can you hear me?
We can hear you. Great. Thanks so much for joining.
Yeah, no problem. Good to be on the air.
Okay. Anyway, we were just getting an introduction from John Fox Rubin here, a little bit of an idea of this project. How long has this been in the works, John? Are you aware of this idea percolating some years ago, or is it more recent than that?
I'd say it was a nice combination of work that's been going in the community for quite a while and an opportunity that the Department of Energy, a funding opportunity announcement that they released last year around this time, actually. And I learned about the funding opportunity, and I started talking to people in the community, including Colin Laird of the Third Street Center, Alice Laird of CLEAR, town manager of Carbondale, Lauren Gister, Gail Schwartz from Habitat, and we thought, wow, this Department of Energy grant that would be a design grant with a whole year to design a thermal energy network for a community, a coalition. And that was built into the Department of Energy. They wanted a coalition of partners. And we thought, what better community in our region to have a coalition than Carbondale?
And what makes you say that?
I think Carbondale has a history of collaboration, and that's one of the things that CLEAR has been doing for years as well, is working across political boundaries and ideologies to look at how do we solve, you know, contemporary energy problems. And the Third Street Center is an amazing place to convene. And they started doing work on what's called a net zero energy district in 2017, 2018, with some leading thinkers around the world that came here for design charrette. And so they had already done some you know, initial work that could really help us to build a successful proposal, but also the relationships that are so important in a coalition. And so our coalition includes the Carbondale Branch Library, the Roaring Fork School District Administration and Bridges Building, and the staff housing that's near the 3rd Street Center, and then the 3rd Street Center as well. Wow. And 3rd Street Center, as many people know, sits on Town of Carbondale property, and it's an independent building, independent nonprofit. So there's already like this collaboration already occurring in our community.
And so there was already an idea about a net zero zone district, but maybe geothermal wasn't a part of the recipe yet.
I think that's correct. And not yet is the right way to view it, because they explored it and they were not able to finance it and jump right into it, but they were able to make 3rd Street Center a net zero electric building.
Right.
But it still is heated with natural gas, much like most of the buildings in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And that has, you know, quite a bit of decarbonization potential whenever you're heating, because that's the main energy consumer of a building over its lifetime, is heating in our environment.
Buzz, is there anything you want to jump in with here?
Oh, yeah. That point that John was making, that was something that I asked about. John and I spoke on the phone a little bit ago, but yeah, the distinction between the 3rd Street Center being net zero energy versus zero emissions, that I didn't know that. So, and that was a distinction that I think not many people are really conscious of. They think net zero, they think that encompasses everything, but there's different levels to that.
Well, Yesenia, I believe you had a few questions too.
Yes. My first question was, like, how long will this project take to build?
That's a great question. We're designing it right now, and we're planning to implement it in phases. So the design phase that we're funded for by the Department of Energy is a one-year design effort. And then they have a second part of the grant that's called a deployment grant. And we're planning to apply for that grant, and if we succeed, we'll be building the first phase of the project starting next year around this time.
Mm-hmm.
But the multi-year build-out that we're designing for is probably more like 5 or 10 years on top of that. So these kinds of systems, the first phase would be able to heat and cool the 3rd Street Center building and then a number of the townhomes on 2nd Street that opt into the district. We would hope to have that done probably within a year of that first start. So let's say we start next year at this time. So 2026, March, people would be up and running for that first phase. And then over the next 3 to 5 to 10 years, we might go north up into the school district property. They have a couple of fields that are undeveloped. They may change the plans for those. They also have a gym that doesn't have air conditioning that they'd love to have air conditioning in because they can't use it part of the year. So as soon as possible, we would migrate the district north to accommodate any additional uses there. And then some of the buildings that are even newer, like the Carbondale Library, when their systems, when their HVAC, which stands for heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, when their systems start needing to be replaced, that's when it's a good time to just go ahead and plug into the thermal energy network. And then for the next 10, 20, 30, 40, even 50 years, some of these systems can last, and they're so efficient that it really makes a long-term kind of design and implementation mentality possible.
You said that you want to reach the school. Is that Roaring Fork or Bridges?
It would be the Bridges High School, and then the administration building, which is actually the oldest building in the district. It was built like in 1917 originally.
Wow.
And it's been retrofit a few times to be more energy efficient, but it still is using gas for heating.
Would it still be like being powered by the same, from the same place that the 3rd Street is being powered by?
It would still, so how it's going to work is there's going to be a bore field with a number of holes into the ground that will exchange energy to the ground and come back up. Though the initial bore field will serve the initial district, and then as we expand, we'll expand the bore field. But the beauty of how the network systems work is the incremental expansion doesn't need to be as big as the initial, because you start getting a synergy from the different uses in the buildings being used at different times. And if you have part of the district that's cooling and part of the district that's in the heating mode, those kind of balance out themselves so that the geo field can be smaller. And that just makes it more affordable. So one of the things the Department of Energy is interested in is having networked geothermal systems has higher thermodynamic efficiency so that the heat pumps can be less costly to operate than individual heat pumps. Like if we all just said, yeah, we're going to put a heat pump in every building, if you network them, you get much more bang for your buck.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
If I may ask a question real quick. Something that I keep thinking about as you're talking more about this, how new of a technology is this? Because I've never heard of anything like this before.
Well, what's exciting about this to me is this is not new technology. Ground source heat pumps have been around quite a while, and networking them in this way has been going on for probably 20 years. They've been used primarily in bigger campus-type situations, like Colorado Mesa University out near Grand Junction. Their system is about 15 years old, and it has been a tremendous success.
Right.
But that's one entity that says, we're going to do this, because they can look at the long-term return on investment. What's harder is doing what we're doing, which is getting smaller entities together, and these are all like nonprofits, governmental organizations, not big developers with lots of available money. So we have to be really thoughtful about how we finance something like this. And once we can kind of solve these challenges of how do you finance it and operate it, then we can help replicate it in other communities. And that's really what the Department of Energy is interested in, is how do we scale these solutions? Because they're not like rocket science technology. They're kind of existing.
Cool. We were talking about this outside our office at the 3rd Street Center and pointing out where the test hole was drilled, and curious about what these bore fields are going to look like, if there continues to be grass, if the fields will continue to be fields. Could you explain a little bit how the underground infrastructure will work, and whether that may involve removing a lot of and then replacing earth?
Yep. So what's interesting about exchanging energy with the ground is you can do it with a vertical bore field, which is what we're planning, or you can do it with a horizontal bore field. The horizontal ones you typically scrape off 10 to 15 feet down all of the soil, and then you just lay loops sort of horizontally, little circular loops, and then you put the dirt back on, and you can build on top of that, or you can leave it a field. The way we're doing, you can almost do anywhere, because you can drill at an angle, and you drill down and you build a manifold under the surface, again, underneath the frost line. So in our environment, it's probably more like 6 to 8 feet under, and that's where you transfer from the bore field. And think of like each hole just has one pipe going all the way down to the bottom and coming back up, and it's about 500 feet down. In how we're planning the system here, and you just run water in there, and that water is your heat transfer fluid. It's transferring heat into the ground when you want it to, and it's pulling heat out of the ground when you want it to, and then that goes into a bigger loop that has a lot of capacity of energy, because you have many small boreholes, maybe 50 to 100 in the situation we're looking at. And then that just feeds into one big loop that goes between all of the buildings in the network. And any heat pump can grab that water, maybe it's 59-degree water, use some energy from it, and bring it, put it back into the pipe at 50 degrees. And so that delta T is what's designed for in these systems. That delta T means the change in temperature. So it went 9 degrees of temperature, depending on how many gallons that is. That's a lot of energy that you're pumping into the building with a heat pump.
If I might ask a question, John, what's the maximum capacity of the system that you guys are currently planning? Will it be just set to the maximum full 16 acres or even expandable beyond that?
We are designing the system to be future-proof. So even though our first implementation phase is only going to really accommodate the 3rd Street Center and the 2nd Street townhomes, we're having places underground, back to Raleigh's question, where you can connect, so we can connect south and east over towards the Crystal River Elementary School and the Carbondale Middle School. If we wanted to go either of those directions, we can go west under the highway 133 over to Ross Montessori School in that neighborhood. And then once the district has gone north up to the Carbondale Library, it could expand further north and work its way downtown or into other neighborhoods. So this could be the start of a multi-year, multi-million dollar budget for underground heat pumps, or, you know, underground energy exchange with ground source heat pumps that are, heat pumps themselves are above ground.
There is a lot of upsides and a lot of positive things for this, but is there any downside to this project? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd say like any big ambitious project, there are challenges that you might run into. When we started, we knew that we needed to drill a test borehole to make sure that the geothermal potential under Carbondale wasn't affected by geology or some unknown factors. So it was nice that we did that early in the project because it could really inform the design. What I've learned through this project is the geothermal potential is pretty much throughout the state, and the cost of drilling depends on your local geology, and that could really have an effect on the economics of it. So a good example of how we're looking at it here is we may augment the ground source heat exchanger with some thermal heat exchangers, solar thermal systems on the roof of the 3rd Street Center. And there already is an existing one there that just needs to be upgraded. So we're going to blend that in to the ground, and that just lowers the cost. So sure, there could be unforeseen challenges, but because many of these technologies exist, we just need to put them together in a really elegant way to make them economic and find the right way to operate the system so that it stays very stable and affordable for the people that are using it.
And I have another question following with the system that you said. What would happen if it stops working, like once it's already built and working?
It's designed to be pretty resilient. Usually the systems have multiple pumps, and you run the pumps at very low load most of the time. So if a pump fails, you can just switch to one of the other pumps while you switch that pump out. The fluid being moved around is water, and usually there will be some stabilizers in the water, but it's not expensive fluid or an environmentally dangerous fluid. So if there's a leak, you can usually solve it while it's still working. The systems also have some built-in redundancies. For example, the one in Colorado Mesa University has backup boilers, gas boilers. So even though we're going to decarbonize it tremendously, the infrastructure that's already here for the gas can still be used for your backup systems. And that's another way to kind of mitigate risk of a failure.
I'm thinking about the Eagle Valley evaporite, I think is the layer of geology upon which Carbondale sits, and people have said it's kind of prone to sinkholes. Is that a factor or consideration? Is that something to be worried about?
I think we will learn more when we drill each hole, and usually you'll discover that as you're drilling, and if there's a local effect, we may need to affect the design of the bore field. But right now, that one hole seemed to be pretty representative of what our hydrogeologist anticipated, who reviewed the local geology.
Yeah. Well, there are so many questions on this, so I do want to point out that a big reason to bring this conversation in and to put it in the paper is that the community is invited in to a open house on April 24th at the 3rd Street Center. So if you are intrigued and you want to learn more and ask your own questions. I'll just put that out there. That's being hosted by Clear, once again, April 24th on Wednesday.
From 5 to 7 p.m.
Okay, and people can just stop in, or is there a big presentation?
There's not a big presentation. We're planning to have multiple posters that you can go and review and kind of synthesize the information from each poster in kind of a organized, you know, linear fashion. You don't have to. You know, we have station 1 through 5, and then you can leave feedback and ask questions at the last station. But someone could work backwards if they wanted. They might be a little confused because we've kind of put out the logic of the history of the project and some elements like that. And then myself and some of my colleagues and some of the project team will be there to also answer questions.
And there's a portion, too, for maybe people in the field or more specialized. What does that look like?
You know, earlier in the day, we have a workshop for professionals that are in the community thinking about the future and what role they might play. And that's open for registration for, you know, architects, city planners, builders, developers, anyone that wants to learn more about how a networked thermal energy system could play in their world, in their work, and also how it might map out in our community here.
Mm-hmm. We have about 5 minutes left, so I'll turn it over to Gus and Yesenia and then Buzz if we have any other questions.
I was just wondering if you wanted to plug those other one of your coworkers that are going to be here there. Which other of your coworkers are going to be present at the event?
Okay, so Lauren Serbier, who's joining me on this nice adventure through Clear, is a key member of our team who will be there. We'll also have Matt Garlick from the Gray Edge Group. They're the experts in geothermal system design that we've partnered with on this. We'll also have Dr. Shen Jin from National Renewable Energy Labs and his colleague Jing Wang, also Dr. Jing Wang. They both have been very involved in the modeling of the buildings. And they'll be there to explain how you would model a building, model the energy of a building, so that we can design a system to retrofit an existing building, but also if you were building a new building. So we're going to have some really neat experts at the open house that'll be able to answer questions much better than myself.
John, do you know if there's any communities in the Rutherford Valley or beyond Greater Colorado who are interested in system?
There are quite a few other municipalities and different entities in the Western Slope that are looking at some networked opportunities. Some of them will be at the workshop earlier in the day. Vail, the town of Vail is interested, town of Eagle, Picken County, Winter Park. These are just Steamboat, the ones that are off the top of my head, that are aware of what we're doing and we're aware of what they're planning. The state of Colorado has a large grant opportunity out there right now for entities to be applying for pre-design funding and even some implementation funding. So it's a good time to be in this space.
Did you have any other questions, Yesenia?
Yeah. About the funding and the grants, you also mentioned that it might be able to heat up some houses. Would the owners of the houses also have to contribute?
It's a little early to know exactly how the individual homeowners would participate. We are aiming to find a very easy way for them to say yes, so that they don't have to spend a lot of money. There are a fair number of tax credits available through the Investment Recovery Act that the government just passed that make it really cost-advantaged to certain technologies like air source heat pumps, heat pump hot water heaters, and the largest amount is for a ground source heat pump. So we're hoping to have a model that helps either the developer capture some of those tax credits and then pass it on to the homeowners, or to help the homeowners walk through that process. And so we're still planning that out. We don't know exactly how it'll map out, but the idea is to make it very easy for someone to say yes and not be like, oh gosh, now I have to take out a second mortgage. You know, I don't understand the payback. So I can't guarantee anything right now, but we're really trying to be thoughtful about, because there's a lot of synergy by combining the Third Street Center, which is busy all day, with some townhomes next door, which are energy intensive in the evenings. And that just helps you share the cost and amortize the savings over a bigger group of payers.
Well, thank you so much, John Fox Rubin. You did great answering all our questions. Is there anything else you would like to add?
No, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity and the work you all are doing. Appreciated your questions, Yesenia and Gus, and Will, for your coverage of us in the Super Sun.
And yeah, I got a problem. It's great.
Again. And that article is on page 4 of this week's Oprah Sun. So I hope that you check it out. And if it fits your schedule, that you can stop by the Third Street Center April 24th at 5 p.m. Thanks, everyone. Stay tuned for Regional Roundup coming up next.